updates. The Browns say Brock Osweiler will start their preseason opener against the Saints Thursday. Trevor Siemian gets the nod for the Broncos against the Bears Thursday. And Tom Savage will start for the Texans when they face the Panthers Wednesday night. A game you can watch live on NFL Network starting at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. This has been NFL Network Now on the Westwood One Radio Network.
Napa Know How. If your car's due up for an oil change, but you've been holding out till Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil was on sale for just $5.79 a quart, does that mean you've been patient or you've been procrastinating? Either way, your procrastipatience just paid off, because you can get Mobil 1 full synthetic for just $5.79 a quart. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
General States pricing. Sales prices do not include applicable state, local taxes, or recycling fees. Offer expires 8/31/17.
Okay, keep your eyes closed.
Okay.
I want to show you my first ever painting.
All right.
Okay. Open your eyes.
Oh, that's a lot of colors.
Mm-hmm.
And shapes.
So be honest. What do you think?
Well, I like how if you switch to Geico, you could save hundreds of dollars on car insurance.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Here, why don't I hold your paintbrush while you call them?
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always.
504, welcome in or welcome back to the Todd Bromwell Camp Show, along with Alex Kuhn and our producer Kyle Mann, taking you up until 7 o'clock tonight on 106.3 FM, the South Gym in Iowa City, 107.5 FM, the North Gym in Cedar Rapids, and all across eastern Iowa on 1600 AM, the historic main gym frequency. Ed Creech of MLBTradeRumors.com will be with us later on this evening. We'll talk a little baseball with him. Updated Super Bowl odds released today as well out of the desert in Las Vegas. We'll dive into that and more. We got the Major League Baseball postseason schedule, which was released today, at least the broadcast times and locations for both the American League and National League games. As you mentioned earlier, the World Series will once again bleed into November, provided it goes seven games. You can make an argument as to whether or not that's a good thing or not. We have talked about the Bachelorette finale. We have talked about the death of Glenn Campbell. And we're going to get back on track here. It's only taken us an hour and 5 minutes, but let's talk a little Hawkeye football.
We were in Iowa City over the weekend, and like you said, Todd, during Love It or Leave It, I asked you that one of the questions I posed for you was, will Brian Ferentz be will Kirk Ferentz be the second most popular Ferentz in Iowa City during media day? And you said absolutely. You were not wrong. Your prediction came true.
Brian, I think, had a bigger crowd around him than Glenn Campbell did when I went and saw him in Osceola. I mean, he was a very popular guy, and it wasn't just 5 or 6 minutes, and then people were moving on. The reporters that were there on Saturday wanted to hear a lot of what Brian Ferentz had to say, and if you've ever heard him talk, you had the opportunity to interact with him, deal with him, you know that Brian is able to articulate his points and expand on just one or two word answers like you get from a lot of people in the coaching business. And he doesn't necessarily talk in empty sentences either. When he says something, it's usually interesting. It usually gives you a little bit of insight into either the program or into his mind or into the mind of one of the other players or the coaches. So that's why I like listening to Brian Ferentz. I think he's going to be fantastic as the offensive coordinator. I hope that he continues to maintain a slightly higher profile than Ken O'Keefe and Greg Davis did as the offensive coordinator, although we tend to see these guys drift back into the shadows once the season starts, and then we get to talk to them again if Iowa goes to a bowl game, or in the case of the coordinators, during Iowa's bye week. But I'd like to hear more from Brian Ferentz. I've got two chunks of just a part of Brian Ferentz's time from Media Day here on Saturday. And we'll go ahead and set this first one up here. It's just sort of talking in generalities a little bit about how he's approaching the offense this year. And then we'll break in between the two and we'll talk about what we just heard here. So Brian Ferentz on Saturday at Iowa's Media Day in Iowa City answering questions from reporters.
How would you like people to describe your offense after the year's over and they look back?
Productive?
as far as approach to the game and maybe...
The tenets of Iowa football are the tenets of Iowa football. And I've been through the program as a player, and I've been through the program as a coach, and shoot, I was through the program as a fan just when I was a coach's kid. So I've seen Iowa football in the 80s, in the 90s, in the 2000s, and now in this decade. The keys for us don't change. We're going to be tough. We're going to be smart. We're going to be physical. Most of all, we're going to be competitive. And we're going to compete in all that we do. And I don't just mean, oh, hey, we're trying to be competitive. I mean, we're going to go out there and compete. We're going to try to win. Mm-hmm. And we don't care who lines up. We're going to attack every snap and do the best that we can. And so I think, you know, obviously, you'd like to be productive. You want to run the ball. You want to throw the ball. You want to do all those things. But I think we would all like to be known as an offense and a football team, right, that goes out every week and gives ourselves the best chance to win the game. And that's really what it comes down to in my mind.
What portion of the offense goes through Akram? Do you think there's a limit there to what he can handle, or how much would you like to see there?
We've been really impressed with him so far throughout his career with his growth, and we were hoping that he would continue that growth going into this year, but it's like anybody else, you don't know what's going to happen until, well, you go through that summer, you go through that offseason program, you get on the field. I can tell you this, so far, through six workouts, the growth's there. So we're really encouraged with that. I think he's getting ready to play his best football, and I believe that watching him. Now, how much can go through his hands? Hopefully as much as we need to. But certainly we're going to have to distribute the ball. I think we've seen that in the past. When we get a little bit more one-dimensional, it's a little bit harder to move the ball, and that's just how it works. So, boy, you know, right now, based on what I've seen, I'd like to see the great majority of it go through his hands. But that's not realistic. You know, it's just not. And I don't worry so much about a physical thing, how many carries, yada, 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 right? I worry about let's make sure that the defense is having to defend the whole field and all six skill guys that we have out there that aren't linemen. Let's make sure the defense has to account for all those guys. And I think what will naturally happen if we're worried about that is you're going to see the ball distributed, hopefully, fairly equally.
How long have the working days been for you leading up to practice? And then
same as always.
Same as always?
Yeah, same as always. You know, I think it's different. I'm in a new role. I'll tell you this, I'm not as efficient as I would like to be doing the things that relate to my job responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I got more done as a line coach, but I was very comfortable being a line coach. I'd done that a long time. I was better at it. So it's the same. You know, we don't work. And I know it's a cliche. I really do. My wife would tell you the same thing. It drives her nuts. But I've never in my life looked at the clock and said, man, I got to be here 2 more hours. Yeah. Never done that. Football is such a great sport, and coaching football is such a great job. And I've looked at that clock a lot of times and said, I'm going to be in big trouble. Yeah. I need to get out of here.
Well, getting out of your comfort zone is a way to grow, too, obviously.
It is.
A new challenge.
Yeah, it is. Growth's uncomfortable. Yeah. And stepping outside your comfort zone, I think they call it a comfort zone for a reason.
Yeah, right.
But it is. It's part of life. It's part of growth. And I think if you want to do anything, we emphasize that with our players all the time. We're pretty vocal with our players that they need to be willing to do those things. I don't think it'd be fair for any of us as coaches to not hold up our end of the bargain. We got, you know, Tim Polasek's coaching the offensive line. He's never done that before. He's out of his comfort zone a little bit. You know, Coach Copeland's coming out of an environment that offensively looked a little bit differently than what we do. So he's out of his comfort zone. I think the head coach probably out of his comfort zone. He's got a new coordinator. He's got some new staff members, right? There's always that element unknown. But that's what we do. That's our job. And the way we handle that, I think, is going to dictate the success or failure.
Perfect world, you name the starting quarterback by when?
That's a great question. By the time we have one. And what we need to do right now is let these guys compete a little bit and try to find out if someone can separate. And we're 6 workouts in, and I'm not ready to tell you that anybody's separated. But what I can tell you, we're encouraged because we have 2 guys that are both very well respected by their peers. They're guys that their peers see as quarterbacks. And I really think that's as important as anything to play in the position. You know, how do your players that you're going to be in the huddle with, how do they see you? And our guys see both those guys as quarterbacks. To me, that can only be a positive. We play 12 games scheduled. I know all 12 of them are going to be competitive. I know they're going to be physical. I know they're going to be hard to win. And there's going to be 11 guys on the other side of the field trying to whack our quarterback. There's a great chance we may need both of them before it's all said and done. So right now we feel like we're in a really good place, but we're going to let them continue to compete.
Do you feel like you'll you need to make an announcement before the season or make a decision, or would you carry it into the season?
You probably feel like we need to make a decision, don't you? In all seriousness, we would like to have a starting quarterback pretty quickly, hopefully as quick as we can, because I think it's good for everybody to have a guy who is the guy. And I always felt that way as a line coach. It's good to have five guys that are the guys. We want to play guys, but who are the five guys that are going to start the game? So we'd like to make that decision, but like anything else, we're going to do what's best for the football team. And so as long as that takes, that's as long as it'll go.
So, if it's really razor close, say, August 25th, do you just not make a decision? Are you prepared to not make a decision, I guess?
I'd say I'm prepared to do what's best for the football team. And what I'd like to do is make a decision. I think our whole staff would like to make a decision. But I can't close the door on anything right now.
Yeah. Play calling is a huge part of being an offensive coordinator. You haven't experienced that in a real game yet. How much have you thought about that and how that
will? I've given a lot of thought. Obviously, it's a pretty big part of my job. Yeah. So I'd probably be mistaken not to think about it. But given a lot of thought, and there's a lot of situational things. There's a lot of things that go into that. And you're certainly exposed to them, even when you're not calling the plays. The biggest thing for me is just going to be making sure that I'm working ahead a little bit. And, as a play caller, you're more seeing the result, not necessarily what happens, because you got to work a call or two ahead all the time. So that's going to be a little bit new to me. The good news is, Coach O'Keefe's here, and to have a guy that has so much experience, 11 years experience calling the plays here at a really high level, that's a pretty good resource. You got Coach Polasek, who's coming from North Dakota State, where he's been very successful calling their plays for quite two, 3 years, and resources surround you. So you just really have to be ignorant not to utilize them.
Have you reached out to anyone outside the program that might help you in that area?
Sure. You cross paths with a lot of people in coaching. There's people I consider mentors that I was around that were play callers, and I talked to all those guys and tried to get their opinion. And some guys were more helpful than others. Some guys left me with more questions than answers. But certainly you try to talk to as many people as you can and just get a feel for it. And then the other part is making sure you're talking to people who are familiar with what we do. Because the way everybody plays offense is not the way we play offense, and it's really going to drastically impact how you call plays and how you do those things.
Are you on the field, and is Ken in the booth? Is that how that's going
to
work?
Well, we're just trying to work through that, and I think there's some real positives to either side. If you're in the booth, it's a more surgical approach, a little bit less emotions. If you're on the field, you get a pretty good pulse on the game and a good feel for it, and that's where I prefer to be as a coach. I prefer to be there as a play caller, but I'm open to both. I think what we need to do is figure out what's best for the team, and that's me being in a position to make calls without being overcome by emotion. And if I can't do that on the field, then I'll move upstairs right away.
I have a feeling Brian Ferentz is going to wind up coaching from the press box.
I think so, too.
Having seen him on the sidelines, and I just don't know whether or not he's going to be able to separate himself from the game emotionally to the point where he's going to be able to also turn around then and react and get play calls in between maybe being upset at the officials or upset because the right guard didn't block or a receiver dropped a ball. I mean, these are things that I think will work themselves out in due time, but I think there was a lot of stuff to go over there. You clearly get a little bit of insight into how they're approaching the quarterback battle, and they're in no hurry to name a starter. And I know we talked yesterday on the program, a lot of people on the text line thought that Iowa should just name a starter and get it over with. But there's another camp of fans out there that says, no, that doesn't do any good if somebody hasn't won the job. You got to go until somebody takes the reins, and we'll hear Brian talk a little bit more about that coming up in the second clip that we've got here. But what else did you take away from what we just heard Brian Ferentz say? Again, this is from Saturday and Media Day in Iowa City.
I think what you just touched on was the biggest takeaway that I had, and I talked about it yesterday as well. But a lot of people out there want a starter to be named, but I don't think either quarterback has proven that they are the guy yet. I think that this staff wants to name a starting quarterback. As Brian Ferentz just said, I'd love to have a starter. I'd love to have the guy right now. I'd love to have an answer for you. But we don't have an answer for you. The other thing is, and it gets back to your point, Todd, as well. I think a lot of people on the outside, heck, even a lot of Iowa fans, were wondering when this hire was made, is this just going to be more of the same? And maybe it will be. Maybe, obviously, this is always going to be Kirk Ferentz's offense. They're not going to change everything that they do. They're not going to go to a spread. They're not going to go up-tempo. Things aren't going to change drastically. But people ask me all the time, well, is Brian just like Kirk? No. That the answer to that is no. And I think he brings a lot of things to this program that will help kind of drag this program into the 21st century. And you see some of the things happening with the graduate transfer that wasn't happening before. I think he has a big time. His thumbprint is definitely in that. And I think moving forward, he will be able to kind of bring that younger perspective. Will that translate to a better offense? That's yet to be determined. But I think he will bring that younger perspective.
8717 on the Jerry Ask Investment Services text line says, not saying the offense will be bad, but he being Brian Ferentz, is big time deer in headlights. I'm curious how you got that from listening to that clip. Now, do we have time
for
the second clip here? There's actually more interesting stuff in the second clip than there was in the first one, and I think there was a lot to take out of the first clip, but this is a little bit more of Brian talking on Saturday at Media Day. This starts off with another question about the quarterbacks, and then there's questions about the fullbacks, and then you get inside the mind of Brian Ferentz and how he approaches offense. He even shares his favorite personnel grouping. You may or may not like what he has to say about his favorite personnel grouping, but here it is.
Could you see a situation where two quarterbacks playing a game?
Sure, yeah. If one guy gets hurt, the next guy will go.
But without injuries, could you see that?
Yeah, I'm not ready to rule that out. I don't think we can ever rule that out. I would be irresponsible to sit here and tell you something's never going to happen, right? But I can tell you this, we would prefer not to do that. I don't think a platoon quarterback system is really good for a football team. We've had some experience with that in the past, and you know, I can't think of any example for us where it's been a real beneficial thing or we've reached a consensus doing
okay.
It. So we'd prefer not to do that. But again, Pat, I wish I could tell you something that'll never happen. I've learned enough now to not make proclamations like that.
Because it could be a case where you don't know until you see him out there on the field?
Could be a little bit. You know, we went through that with CJ to some extent. You know, CJ never really won the job. CJ never really won that competition as clean as you would have liked. But eventually we had to do what we thought was best for the football
team.
And that was to push him ahead. And, you know, I thought Jake handled extremely well. I'm very happy for his success as CJ's. Worked out for all parties involved. But at the end of the day, we have to do what we think is best for our football team. Three, if you include Austin Kelly, who hasn't played in as many games as a fullback, but was a big part of some of our special teams last year. Those three guys are just, those are what you're looking for out of Iowa football players. All three guys are guys that have walked on here. Things weren't handed to them. Things didn't come easily. And the way they've earned playing time is by banging their head against somebody else as hard as they can over and over again and never touching the football. Never touching the football. I joked with him the other day. We were installing a personnel group. I said, hey, look, guys, we're just trying to find more ways to get you off the field. but that's not true. My favorite personnel group is what we call green. It's two running backs, a fullback and a tailback, and two tight ends and one receiver. I love that thing more than anything in the world. Now, it may not always be the best answer for us to win games, but I like having a fullback on the field. I know the head coach likes having a fullback on the field. I know Tim likes having a fullback on the field. I know Ken does, right? Kelton certainly does. He comes out of a triple background, and I know he's at Northern Illinois, and I know LeVar enjoys having one as well. So we like fullbacks. All three guys are doing great. Brady Ross is as good a story as we have on our football team and as well-respected a leader as we have on our football team. Jerry Kulik, really the same way. So the challenge for us is we gotta make sure we keep those guys involved in the game plan as much as we can, because I'll just tell you this, in my opinion, we play better when those guys are on the field. You know, they may not be the best athletes or the best players, but they make guys around them better.
Two playbook questions. One,
sure.
How much does the playbook now reflect maybe some changes the new assistants brought to the table?
Well, I think you have to be open to new ideas. Anytime you bring people in, part of the process is there's that transfer of information. And we've done things a certain way here. Culturally, we're not going to change. We are who we are. But as you have this influx of knowledge,
and ideas, there's different ways to do things. There's a lot of ways to skin a cat, and a lot of them work, right? And so offensively, we'd be crazy not to listen to guys coming in and ideas and thoughts and be open to those things, and especially with some of the success that these guys had doing those things. It's not like they were just slapping it out there. They were highly successful, extremely successful. So certainly there's going to be that influence.
Second question, if you're the defensive coordinator at Wyoming, how helpful is it going to be to look at last year's offensive tape from Iowa?
Extremely helpful. Yeah, extremely helpful. But you'll get the personnel, and you're going to see our players. But at the end of the day, I think that stuff is always overrated, even with a coaching change, because 2012 – 2013, 2014, 2015, I'm sorry, those are all different teams. And same thing with 16. And I think that's true of anybody we play. We played Miami of Ohio to open last year, and we've done a ton of studying of their season the year before, and they came out and it looked totally different than anything we'd prepared for. So that stuff, I think, is always a little bit overrated. When you're looking back at the old stuff, you're really trying to get a bead on the personnel. You're really trying to get a bead on the players and who's doing what. Maybe some general philosophical things, which probably is not going to change much for us. But it's always kind of hold on to your butt for the first quarter anyway and try to draw it up on the sideline.
Is there a blueprint? Is there a plan? How do you want to use Butler and Wadley kind of together?
Yeah, I don't know if there's any blueprint or plan. You know, I think you just want to get guys out on the field that have a chance to make the play with that ball in their hands. And then what you need to do is you need to have enough language. You need to have enough flexibility to move guys around. And just because maybe you're a running back, doesn't mean you have to line up in a traditional running back spot. I think we need to be open to having guys play different spots, move around a little bit, and find ways to get them the ball in that manner.
So you could play them both together? I mean, they both have strong receiving skills.
I think you could play anybody together. You know, I could see us playing with three running backs on the field. If we feel like three running backs are our best option to win a football game, we're going to get them on the field somehow. And maybe three guys in the backfield, maybe no guys in the backfield. You know, if we felt like having four receivers on the field was the best thing for us to do to win, then we need to find a way to do that, and so on and so on. So that's the challenge on our end. Not as big a deal for the players. They're usually pretty good at adjusting, especially if they're going to get the ball. They like that. What we need to do is make sure we're open to put them in those spots.
Now, the deer in headlights comment is not going over very well on the Jerry Ask Investment Service text line, by the way. 4233 speaking for a number of the texters. He says Brian is far from deer in the headlights. We're lucky to have that caliber of a coach on our staff. So you get a little bit more insight in that second clip of what he likes, his favorite personnel group. He loves that grouping more than anything in the world. Hopefully his wife wasn't listening when he said that. But I think, you know, metaphorically speaking, he's talking in football terms. But this is going to be Iowa football this fall and moving forward with Brian Ferentz at the offense. And anybody who thought otherwise, I don't know why you did, but Brian has an appreciation for how the Hawkeyes have played the game ever since Hayden Fry was here and he was a little kid. I mean, this is going to be take advantage of what you've got to work with on the roster, and they've got a couple talented running backs. They've got a big, strong offensive line, a veteran group up front, and they're going to mix in some passing to keep everybody honest, I think, moving forward. But I'd be lying if I said I'm sitting here on August 8th and I'm not expecting a healthy dose of Akram Wadley and James Butler this year.
Oh, there, you will get a healthy dose of both of those guys. I'm just going to be interested to see if Brian Ferentz will be able to use his personnel a little bit more effectively than the way Greg Davis did. And I think that was a criticism that was coming from certain players, certain people who follow the team, that he just wasn't able to get the most out of what was there. The fact that the running game was as successful as it was last year and there was no threat of a passing game kind of rubbed people the wrong way. So whether that is having three running backs on the field at the same time or no running backs, like he said, we'll see. I know he loves the set that he brought up. What was it? Two running backs, a fullback, and one wide receiver, and
green,
a tight end.
Green personnel grouping.
But I do think he will be able to adjust to what the strengths of his offense are a little bit more effectively than Greg Davis was able to.
9048 on the text line. Notice how he never mentioned the quarterbacks by name. Not good. I wouldn't read too much into that. Every coach talks about personnel a little bit differently. But he did talk about other guys by name, so I don't know. Here's what we're going to do. Keep it right here. Let's send it over to Kyle, who's going to take a break from the Jerry Ask Investment Services text line to bring you another Midwest One Bank Big Board update. Midwest One, where you're the one.
The Iowa basketball team played the first game of its Euro trip this afternoon in Heidelberg, Germany, against a German all-star team. They used a starting lineup of Bohannon, Moss, Wagner, Uhl, and freshman Luca Garza. The Hawkeyes won 99-65, led by the freshman Garza with 17 points and 10 boards. The Iowa women's basketball team released their non-conference schedule today, which includes five teams either ranked or receiving votes in the coaches' poll: Florida State, Quinnipiac, Drake, Mizzou, and Elon. The Iowa High School Athletic Association announced a tweak to the boys' state basketball tournament today, condensing the all-week tournament from 6 days to 5 days. Seven games each will be played across all classes on Monday and Tuesday, with six being played in the days after, culminating with all four title games being played on Friday. The tournament has historically always concluded on Saturday. The Colonels lost to the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers last night 7-2, clinching a season series victory for Wisconsin, but the Colonels will at least have a chance to even up this four-game series tonight. They'll have Brian Sammons on the hill taking on Chase Anderson, who's on a rehab assignment from the Brewers. The Twins won the first game of a 2-2 home-and-home series with the Brewers last night, 5-4, with the winning run coming by way of a balk in the seventh inning. The Twins host one more before the teams head to Milwaukee, and it'll be Adalberto Mejia and Matt Garza dueling it out beginning at 7:10 on 107.5 FM, The North Gym.
How is the state making money off the state basketball tournament if they're shaving a day off? I would have thought they would have figured out a way to add an extra day. They're making their money. They're getting their money somehow. I'll have to have somebody who understands the situation a little bit better explain it to me. We've got updated Super Bowl odds. Yes. Updated odds on Super Bowl 52. We'll bring them to you next, right here on the Todd Brommelkamp Show on KGYM.
This bottom of the hour Sports Center update is brought to you by Steve Anderson and his team at Hawkeye Title and Settlement, celebrating 12 years of service.
Dear U of I, just a note to let you know, if you're ever thinking about selling Kinnick Stadium or Carver Hawkeye Arena, please consider Hawkeye Title and Settlement. We're here to provide efficient, high-quality real estate title and closing services. Signed, Hawkeye Fan Forever, and send. Hi, this is Steve Anderson with Hawkeye Title and Settlement. Whether it's a large commercial property or if you're buying your first home, remember, we're here to help. Hawkeye Title and Settlement Services of Iowa City. You'll love our team just like you love the Hawks.
ESPN Radio Sports Center.
I'm Christine Lisi. This is what you need to know. Major League strikeouts leader Chris Sale on the hill tonight for the Red Sox when the AL East leaders try and extend their winning streak to seven when they visit the Rays. The game also marks the return of Boston second baseman Dustin Pedroia from left knee inflammation. Sale tied with Jason Vargas for the American League lead in wins with 13. Vargas starts for the Royals tonight versus the Cardinals. The Mariners in the thick of the hunt in the AL wildcard race, dealing with injuries to a pair of pitchers. Lefty Felix Hernandez diagnosed with bursitis in his right shoulder, expected to miss 3 to 4 weeks. And reliever David Phelps likely out 2 to 3 weeks with an impingement in his elbow. Former Syracuse football coach Dick McPherson has died at the age of 86. He guided the Orange to an undefeated season in 1987 and 5 bowl games in 10 seasons as head coach. The Patriots, the first NFL team to buy their own planes to fly to games. Sources told ESPN's Darren Revelle, New England bought the two 767 Boeing wide-body jets in the offseason. These planes, depending on miles flown and condition, generally cost between $5 and $65 million.
Want an easy way to see if you could save money on car insurance? GEICO gives you three. Call 1-800-947-AUTO, go online to geico.com, or stop by the GEICO office nearest you. Three ways you could save 15% or more.
Come rock the chalk in downtown Iowa City. This unique chalk art event is presented by Midwest One Bank, and the fun is free for the whole family. Come see beautiful chalk art displays, pick up some chalk and create your own masterpiece, and enjoy excellent live music. Join in this family celebration of creativity Friday, August 11th at the corner of Clinton and Washington in downtown Iowa City. Chalk this one up to a super duper time with Midwest One. Get all the details at rockthechalkic.com.
Cedar Rapids Colonels, let the good times roll.
If you love Mr. Shucks, then you won't want to miss this Friday's Colonels game. The first 1,000 fans get a free Mr. Shucks belly bobble figurine. That's right, it's not a bobble head, but a belly bobble of lovable Mr. Shucks. Visit Colonels.com to get your tickets now and arrive early to make sure you get your one-of-a-kind Mr. Shucks belly bobble this Friday at the Colonels.
Epix presents the new original series, Get Shorty.
That is a good title.
To make it in Hollywood, it takes muscle.
If you don't produce my film, I'll ruin you.
A B-list producer.
You asked me to make a movie with cash.
Is that a problem?
We can work it out.
And a mob boss.
I like John Stamos. Could he be in this?
What?
Chris O'Dowd from Bridesmaids.
It's good.
And Ray Romano.
Do we have a deal?
Get Shorty. Premieres Sunday, 10, 9 central. Only on Epix.
What you doing?
Ran out of space on my phone, so I'm deleting some stuff. Bye, singing dog. Bye, goal.
I pronounce you.
Bye, wedding ceremony.
Stop. At Metro PCS, you get two free phones with twice as much memory.
Really?
Don't say bye to your memories. Switch to Metro PCS and get two free LG K20 Plus phones with 32 gigs when you switch two lines. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details and terms and conditions.
How good is Quaker State Motor Oil? It's been called a leader in wear protection and the hardest working motor oil. Some say it works so hard it should carry a briefcase. Others call it so hard working that it could be your engine's employee of the month. The kind of hard work that puts in overtime hours and always responds to emails right away. But we just call it damn good oil. Head to Firestone Complete Auto Care for great savings on Quaker State.
Napa know-how.
The Napa Legend battery does legendary things, like starting your car when the heat index hits a buck 25, or making sure your AC stays running like a gazelle. And now, when you buy a Napa Legend battery, you'll get a prepaid Visa card by mail worth $15. $15 back and a new battery? That's not just legendary. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores. Offer expires 8/31/17.
Welcome back in, 5:35. We've reached the halfway point of the Todd Brommelkamp Show, along with Alex Kuhn, our producer, Kyle Mann, on the other side of the glass. We've got a poll question for you today at KGYMRadio.com. I can't believe that I've waited until now to mention this. But did Rachel make the right call last night on The Bachelorette, yes or no?
That's our poll question?
That's our poll question. Emil's Hideaway is located on First Avenue Southeast behind Taco John's, next to the Home Depot.
Emil's, please don't. Please.
She
don't
sent Eric. She ditched Eric after somehow succumbing to the charms of Peter, who appeared to be going home all along. And then Peter gets into the top two, doesn't want to propose to her because, I mean, it's only normal that after 8 weeks, you're not probably in a position to marry someone and make the biggest decision of your life. And she not only punished him for it, but then tried to emasculate him on the post show as well last night.
Did he stand up for himself? Please tell me he did.
Sort of. And then she also threw cold water on his, I don't know whether you want to call it a campaign to be the next Bachelor or not, but now she chose the guy who everybody thinks is just going to ultimately wind up cheating on her anyway.
69-39. I'm boycotting the poll.
Well, you can boycott the poll. Don't boycott Emil's Hideaway. And for everybody that says they don't watch the show, for every three listeners that say that they don't watch, I guarantee you at least one of them does.
That's fair. Every three, one of them? Yeah, I agree with that.
It's the rule of three, not the one that you're used to hearing about probably, but there you go. For every three listeners that say they don't, one of them does. I want to hear, look, this is curious here. I have to sort through Kyle's Game of Thrones texts here on the Jerry Ask Investment Services text line to get back to the Brian Ferentz discussion, the whole deer in headlights issue. But I want to hear from people that still have concerns over Brian Ferentz being the offensive coordinator and why. 319-366-1600. Why at this point, when you haven't even seen him call a play yet, are you concerned about him as the offensive coordinator? And you can say anything. You can say age. You can say inexperience. You can say his last name. Whatever. I just want to know why people out there aren't willing to at least give this the benefit of the doubt, given how much people despised the previous guy who held the position. They couldn't wait to get Greg Davis out of there. Brian takes over, and now you've still got people who are on the fence. I don't get it. 319-366-1600. Explain to me why you are on the fence about Brian Ferentz as the offensive coordinator for the Hawkeyes. I listened to the two clips that we had there, and that's about a third of the time that I was standing there. I actually trimmed a little bit of the fat out of there. There were a couple more fullback questions that I thought, well, we don't want to get that inside baseball, not on a Tuesday in early August, but it's not all of what was said when I was standing there on Saturday, but it's a decent amount to hear. Someone on the text line was pointing out that Brian made the comment about it's a little challenging to think a couple plays down the road, and derp, that's what an offense. By the way, I think that's the first time, and again, I'll have to sift through all of the texts here, I think that's the first time that we've ever had somebody use the term derp on the text line.
That surprises me a little bit.
It doesn't really surprise me a whole lot.
I just, looking forward to this season, I hope that, and based on some of the responses, there's going to be that segment that is really not patient with this entire process. I hope there's a little bit of patience with Brian Ferentz, because fans have been calling for a new offensive coordinator for the last two or three years, and now they have one, and they're a little bit on the fence about this guy. I think that he will be able to at least make this offense a little bit more balanced than what it was, but possibly not in the first year. And the only concern that I think a lot of people have, at least for myself looking at this team, is I don't know right now if he has the personnel that he wants. Does he have a quarterback? We don't know. Does he have a wide receiver or two that he thinks are go-to guys? We don't know. How much is he going to use the tight ends? Well, based off of recruiting and based off of the depth chart, quite a bit, but we still don't know the answer to that either. So until, I think it's the unknown that is kind of freaking everybody out. The last time we saw this team play, or the last time we saw this team on a football field, was the spring game. And that wasn't exactly the most awe-inspiring performance by the offense. So it's been an offseason full of unknowns, and unknowns really scare people.
Let's go to the text line here. Steve in Iowa City says, people have such short memories. KOK was vilified by fans almost the entire time he was in Iowa, yet he was welcomed back with open arms by some of those same fans. I want to get a little bit of the Ken O'Keefe audio on the air tomorrow, because I talked with him for a story that I'm working on about Brian Ferentz for Voice of the Hawkeyes. And I asked Ken O'Keefe, I said, look, when Chuck Long joined us in Chicago, he told us the first time that Oklahoma lost a game when he was the offensive coordinator for Bobby Stoops, he had for sale signs show up in his front yard the next day. And so I asked Ken O'Keefe, I said, maybe you don't need to get into specifics here. If it's too personal, I'll understand. But give me a little bit of an idea of what you went through when you were the offensive coordinator, because you weren't exactly the most popular guy in the world. And if there is ever a more humbling thing to do than to look somebody in the eye and say to them, yeah, you weren't the most popular person in the world, explaining to them why you're asking them the question that you are. But Ken O'Keefe was very gracious, and he told some great stories. And one of them, which maybe you'll hear tomorrow on the program, provided that I can find it, is they used to get calls to their office phones early on in the Ferentz era. And it's not difficult to find the number. Now, most of them get routed through the secretary, but some of the coaches, I think, had direct lines. And maybe they still do. I don't know. I usually have to go through the secretary to get a hold of anybody. But he said one time early on in Nate Kading's first season, somebody called at halftime of a game in which I think Kading had missed a field goal in the first half or something. He didn't quite get into the specifics of which game it was, but I suppose if you sat down through the media guides, you could look at the play-by-play and figure out which game it was. But somebody had called at halftime ripping him for recruiting Nate Kading and entrusting the place-kicking duties to Nate Kading. And the best part about the story is, and not reading into it, he basically came out and said that all of the angry, and he did say guys, all of the angry guys who would call and leave these blustery, bravado-filled voicemails, do you know what would happen with those voicemails? The coaching staff saved them, and they played them, and then they all laughed at the people who called in and said stupid things like, why did you recruit Nate Kading? Because, lo and behold, let's fast forward 4 years later, Lou Groza Award winner, single greatest place kicker in the history of the program, and were it not for injuries, the guy's probably still kicking in the NFL today. He was fantastic. But just a little bit of an insight there. Yeah, people hated Ken O'Keefe, and then they celebrated Greg Davis coming to town because he was a name brand. Greg Davis, name brand, let alone the fact that they flew a plane over the stadium in Austin with a banner behind it saying, fire the guy. People kind of glossed over that. Well, no, O'Keefe's gone. I've told this story before. We were at Coach's Corner. It was a Friday night when the release came out that Ken O'Keefe was leaving for the Dolphins, and I think it's the only time where we've ever said something on the air and people have cheered. There was a reaction in the background.
At Coach's Corner.
At Coach's Corner, that O'Keefe was leaving. Okay? So, okay, you hated Ken O'Keefe. You wanted Greg Davis to succeed. Then you hated Greg Davis. And now you got Brian Ferentz. Are you seeing a pattern here? But Brian's ready for it. I mean, I talked to him on Saturday. He is ready for it. But I want to know from people out there, and the text line is great, but give us a call, 319-366-1600. Why are you on the fence about Brian Ferentz? We've got a lot of people saying his age and his inexperience, but the last two guys that have been the offensive coordinator, they weren't exactly spring chickens, and they had a lot of experience, and they weren't exactly fantastic. So I don't necessarily know why you would want to go down that road again.
The offensive coordinator is the most criticized position in football.
Someone used the term derp on the text line for the first time today. I love it.
And I maybe this is off track a little bit. I'm not understanding why the offensive coordinator, especially in this case, especially in the case of the University of Iowa, why, like you said, are you not sensing a pattern here? That's three offensive coordinators in a row, and all three of them had their ups. They had their, or excuse me, two of them had their ups and downs, and now you're going into a third, and you're kind of on the fence about them. As several people have pointed out on the text line, things aren't going to change. There are not going to be wholesale changes, because the coach in place, who is the dean of coaches in college football, is running the show. And that's how it's his offense. Now, there may be some different variations of that offense, but when the success or failures come, everybody wants to blame the play calling. They want to blame this. They want to blame that. And they want to blame that on the offensive coordinator because for some reason they think that that's it's easier than blaming the head coach, and I'm not sure why.
9359 on the Jerry Ask Investment Services text line says Ken O'Keefe is the offensive coordinator. Brian is the face to take the punches. No way, no how,
nope.
And I'll tell you why. Because when they introduced Ken O'Keefe at Carver Hawkeye Arena in January or whenever it was, when they made that announcement that he was going to be returning as the quarterback's coach, I've never seen him more carefree, laid back, and just rolling with the flow than on that particular day. Ken O'Keefe is not the guy calling the shots. Now, I have no qualms that if Brian Ferentz feels backed into a corner or there's an issue or something, he wants to bounce an idea off of somebody, the first guy he's going to go to is a guy who sat in the very chair that he sits in, provided that the chair made the move from the old facility to the new one. I know the timeline there, but speaking metaphorically here, he's going to go to Ken O'Keefe and he's going to ask him for some advice. This is a guy who spent 3 years working with the single most successful National Football League franchise out there as sort of dipping his toes into the NFL coaching waters, and then comes back to Iowa and has been nothing but successful, at least in my opinion. What's been working for the Hawkeyes for the most part?
The running game
after Brian Ferentz took it over from a completely befuddled and overwhelmed Greg Davis. So give the guy the benefit of the doubt here if you're a Hawkeye fan. They haven't even played a game yet. But I'm looking at the text line, and I see there's still some people who are apprehensive about this. And I think there was a clip, and it wasn't in one of those two that we played today. But Brian basically said, look, I think some people would feel the same way about me if my name were Smith or Jones or anything but Ferentz. The last name certainly has some people a little worried, and they shouldn't be. He's smart enough to realize that. Now, do I think that the offense, look, wildcat formation and anything completely crazy off the rails, four tight ends and stuff like that, outside of a gimmick here or there, you're not going to see it. What you're going to see is what's worked for Iowa in the past. And that's, again, play to the strengths of your team. If you've got a veteran offensive line like Iowa has this year, what are you going to do? If you've got a veteran offensive line with an unproven quarterback, what are you going to do? If you've got a veteran offensive line with an unproven quarterback and very few receivers with experience, what are you going to do? If you've got a veteran offensive line, an inexperienced quarterback, very few veteran receivers with experience, and you've got two really good running backs, what are you going to do? This isn't rocket science here, folks. They're going to be 60-40 probably.
And
run the ball and throw it when you need to.
And it's going to be up to Brian Ferentz and Ken O'Keefe to make it so that they can get to that ratio. Because last year, it wasn't even to that ratio. Teams didn't respect the passing game at all. And with the offensive line that they have returning, and with the two running backs that they have, the entire project of this offseason and this fall camp is to make teams at least respect the passing game, which wasn't the case last year. It doesn't have to be a wide open spread offense. It doesn't have to. You don't have to be throwing for 300 yards per game. And Kirk has said this. They want to be like 2015 Iowa, where it was somewhere around 50-50. And that's a long-term goal that might not be attainable with the roster as it currently stands. But if they can get to 40-60, if they can get to the point where they're throwing the ball effectively when they do it and using play action well, then they will have achieved something this year. And Ken O'Keefe, you may have thought he was carefree, but I just want to know how he's handling these two quarterbacks, because I'm not going to say that I got the sense of frustration, but there's just definitely the sense that neither one has emerged, and we've talked about that already.
519-366-1600-552. We will get to the updated Super Bowl odds. Ed Creech from MLBTradeRumors.com with us coming up, as well as we make our way towards 7 o'clock tonight. Kyle is readying another Midwest One Bank big board update for you. We'll have that in just a minute. Don't go anywhere. Back with more after this.
All right, Dean, time for your annual review.
Take me out to the Twins game.
Okay.
Buy me some cheese curds and ice cold drafts.
Yeah, well, your lunches go pretty long.
I'm in need of sunshine, not a chat.
This is mandatory.
I want epic innings, not balance sheets.
Okay, I get it. Well, enjoy. And have a hot dog for me.
Change up your summer with the Minnesota Twins. Single game tickets are on sale now at twinsbaseball.com.
Napa Know How.
The Napa Legend Battery does legendary things, like starting your car when the heat index hits a buck 25, or making sure your AC stays running like a gazelle. And now, when you buy a Napa Legend Battery, you'll get a prepaid Visa card by mail worth $15. $15 back and a new battery? That's not just legendary. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores. Offer expires 8/31/17.
It's only 30 days until the NFL kicks off the 2017 season. Don't miss a minute of the action. Get NFL Red Zone from NFL Network now. Every game, Sunday, Monday, and Thursday. NFL Red Zone from NFL Network is available on Mediacom. Call 855-MEDIACOM to order now.
5:54, welcome back in. I was taking a look at Twitter here, and one of the guys that I follow mentioned that there was a documentary in 2014 about Glenn Campbell and his battle with Alzheimer's called I'll Be Me. And I think it was on Netflix for a while. I don't know whether it's still there or not, but I would definitely check that out. We opened the program today talking about Glenn Campbell passing away at the age of 81. That is one thing that I don't think I ever want to go through, is dealing with Alzheimer's. That's just absolutely terrible. And there's certainly, look, cancer's no great shakes, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, I mean, all awful ways to go. But I don't want to get to the point where I don't necessarily, not that I don't know who I am, but where I don't know or don't have recollections of the life that I lived. Because I've done some really stupid things, like winning $85 in nickels, watching Glenn Campbell at a casino in Osceola. I want to remember that when I'm old and on my deathbed many, many years down the road. 319-366-1600. We'll have a fitting tribute to Glenn Campbell coming up on tomorrow's program. Also on tomorrow's program, the 6 o'clock showdown, tickets to see the Cedar Rapids Colonels Mug Club coming to a close. There's only two of them left, and you'll have your chance to win a four-pack of tickets tomorrow. Let's send it over to Kyle. He's got a Midwest One Bank Big Board update. Midwest One, where you're the one.
The Iowa basketball team played the first game of its Euro trip this afternoon in Heidelberg, Germany, against a German all-star team. They used a starting lineup of Bohannon, Moss, Wagner, Uhl, and freshman Luka Garza. The Hawkeyes won 99-65, led by the freshman Garza with 17 points and 10 boards. The Iowa women's basketball team released their non-conference schedule today, which includes five teams either ranked or receiving votes in the coaches' poll: Florida State, Quinnipiac, Drake, Mizzou, and Elon. The Iowa High School Athletic Association announced a tweak to the boys' state basketball tournament today, condensing the all-week tournament from 6 days to 5 days. Seven games each will be played across all classes on Monday and Tuesday, with six being played in the days after, culminating with all four title games being played on Friday. The tournament has historically always concluded on Saturday. The Colonels lost to the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers last night 7-2, clinching a season series victory for Wisconsin, but the Colonels will at least have a chance to even up the four-game series tonight. They'll have Brian Sammons on the hill taking on Chase Anderson, who's on a rehab assignment from the Brewers. That game's set to start at 7:05. The Twins won the first game of a 2-2 home-and-home series with the Brewers last night, 5-4, with the winning run coming by way of a balk in the seventh inning. The Twins host one more before the teams head to Milwaukee, and it'll be Adalberto Mejia and Matt Garza dueling it out beginning at 7:10. You can hear that right here on KGYM on 107.5 FM, the North Gym.
You know, taking a look at the box score from that game today, it's hard to imagine that the minutes are going to be as evenly distributed as they were today during the regular season, but you had Jack Nungy and Dominic Yule, who both had 22 minutes played today. And then Tyler Cook with 21. He threw down a monster dunk. I know Hawkeye fans have seen that all across Twitter and social media. Ellingson, Connor McCaffrey played 20 minutes. And then Isaiah Moss, Bohannon, and Ahmad Wagner, 18 minutes. Very even distribution of the minutes. And Nicholas Bear, 17. So I don't necessarily think we can read too much into what Fran McCaffrey is going to do moving forward, at least not through one game of this European tour, but the Hawkeyes with a 99-65 win over the German All-Stars. And if you're curious, Richard Freudenberg led the German team with 13 points today. Updated Super Bowl odds on the way in hour number three, as well as our biweekly chat with Ed Creech from MLBTradeRumors.com. Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, you've got to pick one. We'll find out whose team Ed is on next. You're listening to KGYM.
AutoZone presents Time for a Tune-Up. Performance, fuel economy, engine life. They're all good things that come with giving your car a tune-up. And doing it yourself saves you money. Another one of those good things. Right now, get a